Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. I'm Monique Coven. I'm the host. I'm a certified trauma recovery coach. I've worked for over 25 years as a social worker, and I'm a survivor. The Trauma Healing Podcast is for those who are healing trauma and finding ways to navigate through this messy, uncomfortable, and challenging recovery process. The intent of the podcast is to provide helpful information to validate, inspire you, support you on your healing recovery journey. You're going to hear stories from other survivors, trauma experts, and trauma therapists in the field that will provide information on effective trauma healing modalities, tools, techniques, skills, all in hopes of helping you heal. If you'd like to find out more information on trauma recovery healing, please go to my website at www.cptsdcoach.com. I also have an Instagram and Facebook page at cptsdcoach. Trauma shows up in the present through our body, and it's relived over and over again until we heal it and resolve it. It shows up somatically as experience, as a visceral sense, and it comes out through sensations, reactions, thoughts, behaviors, and being activated. This is the feeling that we often get of being chronically hypervigilant and always anxious. It makes sense, and you can begin to heal. To find out more about my trauma recovery coaching, you can visit my website at www.cptsdcoach.com. This episode is proudly sponsored by the Association of Trauma Recovery Coaching. The association is a professional organization for certified trauma recovery coaches around the globe. It provides coursework, credentialing, and is now moving towards accrediting other organizations that want to provide education for trauma recovery coaching. It's the association's goal to raise up highly trained coaches who can provide effective and easily accessible coaching to any trauma survivor with access to the internet. Their coaches work with all types of trauma. They meet each client where they are and help them work towards their goal. If you're interested in becoming a certified trauma recovery coach, you can view the coursework the association offers at thetraumarecoverycoach.com or email them at info@iaotrc.com. They provide in-depth education about trauma, trauma recovery coaching, and how to build a successful coaching practice. Whether you're a trauma survivor or a potential coach, you can explore the International Association of Trauma Recovery Coaching as they work to educate coaches and advocate for trauma survivors around the world. Hi, everyone. Today, I'm sitting down and having a conversation with Fritzi Horstmann. And some of you may recognize her if you've watched Dr. Gabor Mate's recently released film, The Wisdom of Trauma. And at the very beginning, you'll see this scene where there is a bunch of prisoners. And it's the step inside the circle part where you recognize how many prisoners have been impacted by trauma. And she has started the Compassion Prison Project, and she's going to be talking to us about trauma, how it impacts the brain, and how she is really transforming prisons into being more compassionate places. And instead of being a traumatizing environment, to become more of a compassionate healing environment. So I loved talking with her, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hi, Fritzi.
Hi, Monique. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, you're so welcome. So I am so interested to talk about your program, which is called Compassion Prison Project. And a lot of us were introduced to it through Gabor Mate's trauma movie where the first scene was quite amazing, where we got to experience how many people who are in the prison system actually have experienced not just trauma, but extreme trauma. And it was amazing to see that. And that just sparked an interest in wanting to understand why you started working with them, started this project, and even a little bit about your own history, because often it's from our own place that we have this desire to help other people who are suffering. So I'm curious, what brought you there? So how would you like to start?
Well, I'll just tell you what got me started. In 2018, I was having a cup of coffee with my good friend, Seth. He's a psychologist, and I told him about my childhood trauma. I told him I was abused by my mom. I didn't really at that point know the extent of my trauma, but I just said my mom used to hit me and my dad was an alcoholic. And he said, read this book, Body Keeps the Score. And so I read it and it changed my life because I realized that the behavior I don't want in my life was due to my trauma, my outbursts, my road rage, my compulsion to eat sugar, my compulsion to have coffee. All those activities were from a place of unworthiness and a place of separation. One of the problems with trauma is that it separates us. It makes us feel separate from each other. And and my workaholism. It also brings compulsions to do things to stop the feelings. Netflix, alcohol, drugs, smoking, and workaholism. That's my big thing. And it's still my big thing. It's still something I don't know how to stop. But the good thing now is I'm working on something I love. So anyway, about a month later, after I read that book, I walked into a prison. I volunteered with this group called Hustle 2.0. I walked into a prison, and that day also changed my life because I couldn't unsee what I had seen. What I saw that day were 100 men that were traumatized. They were decent men. They were good men. They were perfect men, but they have trauma, and they don't know they're traumatized. They don't know what trauma does to the brain, body, and spirit. And so I walked out of there and I said, I have an obligation. I wrote it in my journal. I said, I have an obligation to do something here. And so I created a curriculum. I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but the thing that I knew is I had to get back in there. So that was the impetus, is I'm just going to get back in there and we'll figure it out as we go along. And I basically threw that curriculum away about three classes in. I did have a meditation little checkoff sheet and a gratitude checkoff sheet. So I knew some of the basics I got. What I didn't have when I walked in there was an understanding of adverse childhood experiences and an understanding of the effects of trauma on the brain, body, and spirit. I knew it kind of from the book I read by Bessel van der Kolk, but this brain science piece is so crucial and so important. And it's so important for your listeners, because when you're in a state of fight or flight, you're in your brainstem. The brainstem, the brainstem is scanning the world for threat. Constantly. That's all it wants to know is, am I safe? Is the body safe? If the body's safe, great, then you're in homeostasis. But if you're not safe, the brainstem says, it signals to the amygdala to move the body into fight or flight, to get not motivated, but get going, and we got to deal with this threat. So it turns off your digestion, and it also turns off the prefrontal cortex. And that's the part of the brain that understands morality, understands consequences, understands right from wrong. It understands that's a human being in front of you, not a monster, not someone who's going to destroy you. It understands that that's a gun, that's a cell phone and not a gun. But when you're in fight or flight, all that goes away. All that possibility for change, for negotiation, for homeostasis, it's out of the window. And next thing you know, you're cursing at someone, you're yelling at someone, you're fighting with someone, or you're just shut down, or you're killing somebody. And so when I walked into that prison, and most of these guys were in a level 4 security prison, it's a level 4, it's a maximum security prison. They're in their cells 23 hours a day. When I walked in there, most of them had murdered someone. And, you know, as I got, I went back to that prison to teach the class, and I asked everyone in the class, how many of you would be in the class, would be here right now if you hadn't killed the person that you killed? And they all raised their hand. They wouldn't be here because it would have been the other person would be in the prison. So it was kill or die. And it was, they're the survivor. They survived that moment. And that's the thing, is we don't want to get people to that moment. But when you live in extreme poverty, when you live in adversity, when you live in a state of fight or flight, first of all, you don't have the, if you're living in state fight or flight, which is a lot of people, it's called toxic stress. A lot of people are living in fight or flight. They don't have the ability to find homeostasis, to moderate their nervous system. They're in hypervigilance all the time. And that's actually what I was like for most of my life as well. And so priority is get America to be aware of ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, and the state that they're in. If you're depressed, if you're anxious, if you're fearful, if you have a lot of sickness, chances are you have some trauma, you have some childhood trauma, or you have some shock trauma, but you have some kind of something that it signaled to your body, I'm not safe. And the body's like, shoot, now I got to be aware all the time. I mean, what happens is, though, what was adaptive, what was needed in that moment, which was great, was to get you out of danger, becomes maladaptive, becomes injurious to your health and your well-being and your ability to socialize, your ability to connect with people. So all that information has been absorbed into me now after 3 years of doing this. And COVID was a blessing. So we made that film, Step Inside the Circle. Have you seen that film?
Yes, I have.
Awesome. And I hope your listeners will go to our website and see that film, Step Inside the Circle, and share it with your friends and families. So the circle is about, we had 250 men stand in a circle, and for each adverse childhood experience, they took a step into the circle. And so the top 10 adverse childhood experiences are physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical and emotional neglect, a parent or caregiver addicted to drugs or alcohol, a parent or caregiver suicidal, depressed, or mentally ill, domestic violence, separation or divorce, and a family member going to prison. So out of those 10, I have 8 of them. But remember that these things, these ACEs don't include racism, traumatic brain injury, bullying, all those things, parent dying, all those things have a huge effect on your childhood. And that's just four things that I'm mentioning. Violence in your neighborhood. Your father. Now, what I did with one of the ACEs, my father was abused. My mother was the abuser. So I included that as one of the ACEs because it was really traumatic for me. But technically, I guess I would have 7, but I'm switching it around. Domestic violence, I saw it. And the thing about being a child seeing domestic violence is you can't differentiate that it's yourself being abused or your parents. So basically, witnessing domestic violence is abusing your child because they have no sense of separation from the family. And violence in the home is what creates, what I've witnessed in prison is the normalization of violence, where one of the guys, Jesse, that I worked with, he says, I thought it was normal to beat up your wife. I thought it was normal to be hit and slapped. And the thing is, I mean, a lot of people say we need to discipline our children and make sure that they get in line. Well, the thing about disciplining a child corporally is it gives them the information. First of all, it changes their brain. It actually changes the wiring in your brain, but it also gives them the information that they're not enough, that they're not special, that something is wrong with them. And that information is what gets transmitted. I don't care what color you are. I don't care what socioeconomic background you're from. That information changes you, and it creates workaholism. It creates materialism. It creates a sense that I'm not enough, and a striving in the rest of your life to prove that you are worthy. When the minute you're born, you are worthy. My sense is that we're perfect and we are enough. And it's enough. It's enough. It's enough. Enough buying stuff. Enough worrying about what people think of you, because you're perfect. You don't need anyone to tell you.
Yeah. I yes, because shame, you don't come into the world with shame. You learn shame. You know, I was just talking to this one. I work with a lot of moms, and I have one girlfriend who has raised, you know, she had no trauma, and she raised her children without any kind of trauma, secure attachment. And then when she has, let's say, a really hard day with her children, she will never say, oh, you know, I'm such a bad mom. That doesn't even cross her mind. Whereas someone who's had trauma, I'm such a bad mom. Oh, I failed again. So much shame. So yeah, we're not born. I love everything you're saying. I also wanted to add something, which was when you were talking about how domestic violence, it's taken as if you are the one being abused. I would say, and that's also the case when you are witnessing, which will happen, your siblings being abused. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. But any violence that you're seeing, any violence, violence on the screen, that's why you have to really moderate your diet of violence, because your brain doesn't know what's happening, that what's happening, what it's seeing is it's happening to you. We're empathetic creatures. That's why there's, you know, the life expectancy of officers, correctional officers, is 59 years old. What they witness, the violence they witness, and the violence that some of them perpetrate, but they can't differentiate. So they go home with, it's PTSD. I mean, they have PTSD because they can't, the body can't tell it's, the violence that they're seeing is their violence. And what the thing is, what we do to others, we do to ourselves. So all of this, this is throughout our day on a daily micro level. The violence we give to others, we give to ourselves. So if we are being judgmental about somebody, if we are saying, oh, look at her, she's too fat, or she's too ugly, or look at him, he's a wimp, or whatever these things, whatever these judgments, which I'm guilty of being an ass. I'm guilty of it, but I'm not as guilty now because I'm watching my thoughts, and I'm watching what's going on. And that's the thing. Awareness is key, and awareness about yourself is key, because when you start judging other people, you see the judgment, you say, wait a second, why am I doing that? What part of me is not resolved? What part of me, like if I have a body image issue, which some, you know, I'm getting older, so my body doesn't look as young as it used to. And I'm working through that right now. I'm working through loving my beautiful body that gets me around, that lets me smell the roses every day, that lets me be here on this planet. Why would I abuse myself and say, oh, you know, I hear these things. Well, if you lost 5 pounds, and that was a message my mother used to say to me. I was the thinnest I'd ever been as a teenager. My mom says, well, if you lost 10 more pounds, you'd be perfect. But that got right in. That message still haunts me. Because if I was something else, I'd be perfect, is what I'm being told. But how can a perfect person be anything else but perfect? Because you are perfect. So how can any shifts in who you are make a difference? Because our bottom line is we're all perfect human beings. And so we have to question every negative thought that comes out, because it comes from our society, from all these beliefs that we're not enough. But we have to get, the thing is to get to the root. What is the root? Is it from trauma? Is it from shame? Is it from, and you know, emotional abuse is one of the worst ones, because it, you know, when you tell a child, you know, my mother used to say to me, she would call me a whore sometimes, or she said once, I rue the day that you were born. When you hear those things as a child, there's just a sense that, like, what can I do? I'm just thinking of my little girl right now, just thinking, you know, this little person hearing this, like, you know, what message does that send? And who is this little girl that just really just wanted to be beautiful and loved and adored? And so those thoughts come from that little girl. That little girl doesn't feel loved. And so our whole society is running around trying to prove that they have value, which was robbed. It was robbed from them when they were children. Robbed only in our unconscious beliefs, not ever robbed in reality, because everyone here is valuable and everyone here is irreplaceable. Full stop. That's it. But that includes everyone in prison. That includes everyone that's homeless. That includes everyone that we look at that society says they're irredeemable. Not true. It's not true. And all the saints know this. All the sages know this. All the spiritual leaders know this. And honestly, deep down, all of us know this. But trauma puts a mask on it. It's like a gauze. We put a gauze on our own beings. And so if we're not enough, then clearly everyone else in the world isn't enough. And so we have to reverse engineer our entire lives, which is what I've been doing since I started this journey from 2018. I mean, I've gone to every person I've ever harmed and I've said to them, I'm sorry. You know, every bad word I've said. I mean, there are people, I'm just thinking, well, maybe not every of them. I'm thinking of some people at work that I might need to get to. Because the thing is, my belief is that we're all connected. And we there's a book written by Carlos Castaneda, but he talks about we have all these filaments that go out to everybody. And we're connected to everybody. And the ones, and we have those filaments. I don't know if they're filaments. I don't know what they are. But the people that we've harmed, we have that connection to. So we have to repair that filament. And the people that we've loved, there's no problem because there's a flow. But all those filaments, you know, I think it might take lifetimes for some of us to repair those filaments. But, you know, let's get busy with these filaments. You know, it's the first time I've ever talked about the filaments, but, you know, there's no shame in what you did because you were traumatized. That's it. The thing is, there's no shame, but now we know we can make a difference and we can change. And when you fix that filament, instead of the negativity that you put into the world, now you're putting positivity into the world. And so, it's like a process of undoing all the violence that you learned. We were programmed into violence, and violence is materialism. What we've done to this earth, because we were so abused, what we've done is violence. Is what we've done to this earth is violence. And now we have to reverse engineer. It's like, do I really need that plastic bag? Do I really need to buy that thing? Why do I need that thing? Because that, is it filling up a part of myself that's empty? Or do I really, you know, I need to fix the window? That's a whole different thing. But I'm talking about everything we buy, we should be thinking about, what am I doing this for? Is it to fill a hole, or am I enough? Am I enough buying this thing? So
I just, I was just, you know, I was listening to everything and you brought me to tears, especially because viscerally when you talked about the little girl, we could all relate and we all know how perfect she was, but then there's this blockage. That's what we're trying to get through. But I just wanted to say, as you were speaking, one of the areas that a lot of trauma survivors bump into is that, okay, they get to a place where they understand that their parents were traumatized. This is generational. You know, they're just passing on. And that is when they have this mother that has narcissistic tendencies, in that she's not, like, cognitively, I understand, you know, what she did was passed on, but she's not able to hear and receive my feelings about how this impacted me because she doesn't have the capacity. It's so challenging to be able to rise above that. And I'd love to hear your words on that.
Yeah, it's challenging to rise above the power of the adult, the power of the parent. That's the thing. A lot of people in politics are taking out their anger towards their parents on society. That's what Hitler did. And that's what a lot of there's a book by Alice Miller. I can't remember what it's, For Your Own Good, I think it's called. She talks about the abuse that the officers and Hitler endured as children. But because you can't hate your parents, you have to survive. So you're stuck. And Gabor Mate talks about authenticity versus attachment or survival. So you have to survive. So you have to suppress your authenticity in order to survive in an abusive household. And then, so what happens though is you have all this rage because you're being told you're a piece of crap physically and emotionally and sexually, probably. I mean, getting violated and betrayed by your parents. So you're being betrayed. So where does this rage go? Well, if you have power, and that's the thing about power, you take it out on people that have less abilities to survive in the world. And that's, again, no shame. I mean, I'm horrified by it, but no shame, because I know the root of all of this is our traumatic pasts. And, you know, it could just be someone once told you you were a turtle or something, or, you know, you look like a broccoli. That's one of the guys, Daniel, I called him a broccoli head. That's what I did when I was in 10th grade. No, ninth grade. That's me. I'm a bully too. Yeah. But I'm traumatized and I've forgiven myself. And if I could see Daniel today, if I could find him, maybe I'll try and work on that one. I would apologize to him and I apologize to him. If he hears this, I'm so sorry, because who am I to say anything about you ever? I don't know your life. I don't know what you've been through. And I don't know what your gifts are. Why don't I look for what's great about you instead of that you have a frizzy hair? That's what it was. And who am I? And Jesus, you know, but from that place was a little girl that just didn't feel loved and doesn't know how to see the world. And because I couldn't see my gifts, how am I going to see Daniel's gifts? So, and that's just another shocking thing to even talk about and realize, is that all of the possibilities and all of the positivity that I could have given to my classmates in school, if I had a mother who, she was, you know, on some levels, she was an amazing woman, on some levels, like an amazing woman, but she would, you know, she would get triggered and then, It was a poop storm, right? And I was in it. I was in that storm. And my sister was in it, and my sister's a casualty. I was speaking with Nadine Burke Harris yesterday, and she said, "The thing is, we're not broken. We're just injured." And I'm going to use that quote all over the place because it's the best thing I've ever heard.
It is. Okay. And just tell people in case they don't know who she is.
She's the Surgeon General of California, and her big initiative is ACEs, and she has an ACE program right now called Your Number Story. You know, it's you're not your numbers. Your ACEs are you're not your numbers. We have resilience, and we can transform and transcend our past. But the first thing, you got to know it. You got to know that being abused, verbally abused, is one of the worst things that can happen to a child, by your parents, by your peers. It doesn't matter, because that information goes in and it tells you you're enough. And all of the social media stuff with the girls, and they're just looking for evidence now that they're not enough, instead of looking for evidence that they're enough. But this is a script that we've programmed into our society. And I think, you know, we really, really have to start telling our daughters and our sons that they're enough. My son, he's kind of a superstar in his peer group. And I realized today, I said, well, he has this power now. What am I going to whisper in his ear? And I'm going to tell this little superstar, is you have an obligation to make sure that if you see something in your school, someone making fun of somebody, that you speak up, or you go to that person who is humiliated and you say, I'm so sorry that this happened to you. And you start undoing, well, you help me undo some of the stuff I did, but you be a leader of compassion instead of a leader of trauma. And that's what we need. We need leaders of compassion. And I always like to say, instead of microaggressions, micro-compassions. Let's move micro-compassions into the world. A smile goes a long way, and it has ripples. And you don't know where that person could be thinking of suicide, and that smile could change his life.
So, I'm thinking even a glance, because so many people have felt like no one sees me, and even a kind glance, you know, that can do so much for a person.
Exactly. That's our obligation. If we have that energy, if we have that ability to feel positive, to feel good about ourselves. I mean, my son, he says, why are you smiling at everybody? Why do you say hi to everyone? And, you know, I feel like the mayor of my own life. You know, it's like I'm the mayor of my own life. I just feel like I know everybody, but everybody to me is valuable. And I'd like to know what's going on with each of them. I mean, that was exhausting sometimes, but it, you know, a lot of people want my attention these days, and that's another piece that I'm trying to manage because I'm not used to it. This needy little girl now is getting attention, but this needy little girl has also given herself attention. So I don't need it as much, but, you know, be careful what you wish for because it's coming, you know. And, I'm not complaining. It's a gift. And I'm really thrilled that what I'm learning is I can translate and give back to the men and women I'm working with.
So beautiful. Yeah. So really, I mean, everything you're saying from the very start is just helping society really understand, being trauma-informed. I love Oprah Winfrey and Bruce Perry's book, you know, the first one. It's not, what's wrong with you? It's, what happened to you? That's the very first question when you see someone standing in front of you, you know?
Well, yeah. And that's, people don't even know that something happened to them. And that's the thing. They think it's normal. They think this is how it is. It's like, no. But in America, you know, we're a very violent society. Our nation was founded on violence. You know, Native Americans, you would see in newspapers at $200 if you've killed a Native American. So, and slavery, but we still haven't reconciled with it. And I think it's because of the shame that we have. And remember, that seemed right at the time. That all of that seemed right, but we know it's not right now.
You know, it's making me think of, I had on the podcast a couple of episodes ago too, Nakuset, and she's a survivor. Well, her mom was in a residential school in Canada, and then she's from the 60s scoop. She was adopted into a white family. But anyway, it's making me think of how, you know, it came up in the news about those thousands of children that were found. And, you know, people talked about it for what, 2 days? What? Nobody's talking about it anymore.
Well, they're talking more about it in Canada, just so you know.
I'm in Canada.
Oh, you are in Canada.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm not hearing about it anymore. And so, you know, this is it. It's like we need to be still talking and talking and talking and being horrified and, you know, so.
Well, sorry, I didn't know you were from Canada. but I heard about it for a few weeks. The thing I think, it's not just talking about it, because that's the thing is we don't want to move into shame. We have to say, okay, a harm was committed. Now what can we do then? Those are the principles of restorative justice, is that there's people to blame, but blaming is not going to get us anywhere.
But can't there be a healthy shame and a form of grief over what we've done? I think we owe that. We owe it to them for them to see our grief. We don't have to last in the shame or grief, but we have to acknowledge it and take it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. And I think steps have to be taken now. That's the thing. It's like, but if you're angry about it, make a step. I mean, the thing is, who's going to make a step? We've got to make a step. And I'm nobody. I just am making my steps. Steps are being taken. I'm taking steps. And this is what's incumbent upon all of us. Let's stop shopping. Let's stop watching Netflix and let's take some steps, because that's what's going to, you know, step inside the circle. You know, what are the steps you're going to take to change your life, but also to change the lives of others? Because I have to tell you, my life has changed 1,000,000,000%. I was working in the film industry, working with people. I would say 98% of the people I worked with are traumatized. They're all unconscious, all reactive and abusive. And even, you know, even some of it was simmering, but I would still get abused. I would be yelled at for things I didn't even know were in my job description, and no shame, but it's like, well, this unconsciousness is. So anyway, I was working in the film industry, and then I walked into prison, and that was it. I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I can't do this anymore. I can't get abused. But I also can't continue to support something that just doesn't feel, it might be contributing to some of the problems in the world. And so I really, you know, this putting other people on pedestals and the star power. I mean, no shame, but it's like, wait a second, everybody here matters. So, but I took a step into that circle, and I said, we got to change this prison system. And my life has become this magical ride of coincidences. And the other day I found a feather, and I was like, God, because I'd seen an eagle fly 2 weeks ago. And I was like, I want an eagle feather. But I got a hawk feather, and that was just as glorious. I didn't have to have an eagle feather. And then 3 days later, a hawk flew into my husband's office, and he was panicking, but he left 6 other feathers. I mean, we were horrified, but, you know, 7 feathers came into my life when I asked for a feather. And that's just one incident. And Nadine Burke-Harris, you know, she's starting to condone our program. And so the world is starting to, you know, welcome me. I'm finally getting the welcome that we all deserve. And, but not only welcome, support. But it's really not about me. It's about getting this information into the world so we can make some significant changes. It's urgent. It's urgent what's going on. And for your listeners, if you're traumatized, it's urgent that you help yourself and you take care of yourself and you start learning and do the research, find out what works, you know. And we're working, we have really a staff of like 6 people at Compassion Prison Project. And we're all working overtime and driving. We're trying to raise more money so we can hire more people because we want to make these, I can't get all the words out. There's so many things I want to explain. So on my podcast, Compassion in Action, we have all the top experts in the world, trauma experts in the world that I got to interview. And we're taking those snippets from those and sending them to prison in a series we're calling Trauma Talks. So Trauma Talks is a 12-part series and a workbook. Right now, chapters 1 and 2 are going to be 75 pages worth of material, and it's 12 episodes. So it's probably going to be like 300-page workbook. And I'm so proud of the work we're doing. And we're beginning to pilot it at Valley State Prison in September. And, but they said they would let all 4,000 people watch that video, those videos, and do those workbooks. So we're ordering 4,000 workbooks. And it's going to cost us thousands of dollars just to get those workbooks into their hands. But that prison is going to become trauma-informed and trauma responsive by the end of this year. Right.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Let's pray that's the first, but you know, just the beginning.
Well, if it works, it's gonna become viral. And because if the men living in that prison feel like they have something to contribute, that they're not broken, that they have possibility, that their trauma got them into this mess, and their prefrontal cortex is where, once they start working to get to their cortex all the time, instead of, you know, getting triggered and being put back into fight or flight, that's where change happens. Change, you know, be the change, you know, I'm going to add to Gandhi's thing. Be the change, get to the cortex, you know, that's... Get to the cortex and be the change.
So here's a question I have for you. So I understand you're starting with the education piece, but are you going to, or is there plans to really offer them like nervous system regulation tools and things like that?
That's part of the education piece. Yeah. We have the Prison Yoga Project has donated their material. Episode 1 has the VU exercise with Peter Levine. We did the 5-4-3-2-1 sensory exercise also in episode 1. Bessel van der Kolk talks about yoga and the importance of it, because that was one thing for me. I just was like, I don't want to meditate. I don't want to do yoga because that means slowing down. That's why I gave up coffee, because I drank coffee because it's a trauma response. And once I realized that, I said, I got to stop this. And I know there's a lot of diehard coffee drinkers out there. They're like, don't touch my coffee. I was the same way. When I heard I was traumatized, and that drinking coffee adds to the adrenaline in your body, keeps you hypervigilant. It's a way for me to feel safe. Well, guess what? I am safe. But it was like the biggest epiphany for me. And I was a sugar addict since I was 11. I remember buying one of those rolls of chocolate chip cookie dough and a grape soda. And I ate and drank that all at once. I mean, I went into some sugar high and a sugar crash, but that behavior was from living in a household where feelings were not allowed. And I mean, you could cry, but that didn't help, you know, crying just didn't help. So sugar was a great place for me. And then I went on to bulimia in my teens. You know, sexual promiscuity, all these things, that those are, you know, it's right on the list for symptoms of trauma. These are, I'm a poster child for a traumatized child. But you go to prison, and then now we're talking about a whole nother level of abuse. We're talking, the stories I've heard are unimaginable. And I hear them every day. I mean, from a child being isolated, and whenever he got out of his room, he'd get just destroyed, bones broken. He'd go to the hospital and, you know, just all the time going to the hospital. I got a letter from another man just yesterday, and he said, tell little kids need to know that they shouldn't have the parents in the room when they're talking to police. He's in prison, but that was his tip of the day. I mean, it's like, but that's, you know, and the child abuse, that's the thing. That's one of the things I'm really excited about is the possibility of the information about child abuse and its devastating effects being taught in prison and then rippling out to their communities. I don't know how that's going to work, but I'm putting this problem to the 4,000 guys I'm working with at Valley State Prison. I'm going to say, okay, guys, how are we going to figure this one out? Let's figure this out. We got 4,000 brains. You're in your cortex. Let's solve child abuse and let's see what happens. And, but I want this to ripple to every prison. So that's 1,943 prisons in the United States, right? Some states have 50, 60 prisons. I think Florida, and correctional facilities of sorts. So those guys, 1.8 and women, 1.8 million people can affect all those communities. And also the officers, they need so much help because they're in trauma response as well. No shame, but you know, we got to clean up that area too. And then these prisons are going to show society what homeostasis looks like, what calm looks like, what compassion looks like, and what functionality looks like. I want prisons to function. I want people getting mental health care, and I want them to know they're valuable, because the reason why we have such mental health issues is because people think they don't matter, and their inner state says, "Wait, I do," and it's conflicted, but it's reinforced by the prisons. And that's how you heal, being safe and being seen.
Yeah, I think it's incredible, you know, the work that you're doing. But even as you were talking, I was thinking about all those other systems and places that need this help too. And maybe somebody will rise up and go into psychiatric hospitals and start doing trauma training, you know, to the professionals. And it's everywhere. But I so appreciate, you know, your work. I so appreciate everything you've shared. It's been so inspiring and so helpful. So before we close, is there, maybe you could tell us how, you know, maybe if people want to learn more about what you do or if they can help, where can they go?
Absolutely. Please go to CompassionPrisonProject.org. And definitely on the landing page, if you scroll down, there's Step Inside the Circle. So take a look at that. And there's also another film called Honor Yard about the symptoms of trauma. And then share those videos if you don't mind. And then go to our donate page or our volunteer page or whatever. Just get involved. See what inspires you and help us change this paradigm.
Thank you so much. And thank you for your life and everything that you're doing.
Thank you so much, Monique. Such a pleasure to talk with you.